here we are again. Welcome back, everybody. Nice to have you with us. Hope you're doing well. I'm Henrik. You can go to our website, redicecreations.com, for much more. Today, we're talking with Johan Oldenkamp, who returns to the program. He is an all-round scientific researcher based in the Netherlands. He's the author of 26 books, the latest one being Understanding God, and the previous called Holy Science that we talked about last time. Today, our topic is the creation of man, the structure of reality, God's Ten Commandments, the human experience, and understanding God. Welcome back, Johan. Thanks for coming on with us again. Hope you've been well since we last talked.
Yeah, thank you, Henrik. I'm really well, and I'm happy to be your guest again.
Excellent. It was very interesting last time, and a lot of good stuff. And as I understand this as well, we're going to kind of talk a little bit about the somewhat of the same idea, of course, but from a different perspective. It's not that you've changed your ideas about it, but you've kind of taken a position that you're looking at this from the aspect of God as opposed to more science that we talked about last time. But just kind of get us up to speed here again and tell us about holy science and what you mean by that.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, holy science is the reunification of pure science and true service to God. What I mean with pure science is science that is searching for the truth. What we now have at the universities is not pure science because it's bought with money. So actually those scientists are not trying to find the truth. They are just trying to prove what their the financiers want to see. So that's not pure science. And yeah, I talk about service to God instead of religion, because the word religion is comes from re, means again, and the Latin word ligare, which means binding. So the literal meaning of religion is to bind again. So we can say the first binding of every man when he is born or she is born is with God. But when a man is binded again, then it means not with God, but yeah, we can say with the devil.
Right.
So every religion is in fact rebinding every man, not with God, but with the devil. So I don't like to use the word religion, and I prefer to talk about service to God. And holy science is the unification, the reunification of those two, because there are two sides of the same coin. And last time when we spoke, it was about a year ago, Henrik, I talked mostly from the perspective of pure science. And I think this radio broadcast, we can talk more about what is true service to God. I think then everything is in balance again.
All right. Well, that sounds good. Do you want to, I guess, define a little bit more what you mean when you say God?
Yeah, of course. That's most people think it's not clear what God is, but it's rather clear when we look at the first chapter. Yeah, it's not really the first chapter, but let's say the first chapter of the first book of the Bible. And then I talk about the book of Genesis. And most people think that book was originally written in Hebrew, but that is not true. The first, I think, 36 or something chapters were written down in cuneiform on clay tablets. So they are not; they have nothing to do with Judaism. They have everything to do with the culture of the Sumerians long, long time ago. So the age of this first chapter is not about 3,000 or 2,500 years old, but at least 5,000 perhaps years old. So it's much older. And that chapter, that book, so to say, or yeah, I'm not sure how to refer to it, that text, perhaps is that the best, of that clay tablet. That clay tablet is clearly referring to God, because it says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now, what I've done in the book we already discussed last time with the title Holy Science is already in that book I explained that whole chapter is in fact a scientific article. It's a description of how God created the heavens and the earth in seven layers in total. So it's a hierarchy of seven layers. And that is meant with the concept of day in that book. But of course, it's not a day of 24 hours. It's a hierarchy of seven heavens. God is residing at the seventh heaven, all the way on top. And from that seventh heaven, God created six heavens under that seventh heaven, all the way down to the lowest heaven. And the lowest heaven we can also call hell, because yeah, that's what most people are in right now with their consciousness.
Now, before we proceed there, is there anything more you can say about the what tablets specifically you're referring to? Is these the ones that are coming out of from you know, Acadia. I just, you know, if you look around a little bit for cuneiform and Bible, there's quite a bit actually coming out. Which tablets are you referring to specifically?
Yeah, I've not seen those tablets myself. I built on the work of others. But for instance, every of those historical accounts, because that's what we talk about, every one of those has been has an ending sentence, so to say.
Mm-hmm.
Each of those stories ends with the sentence, "This is the Toledoth of," and then the name of the perspective from which that has been written down. And the conventional translation of Toledoth as generation, that translation is not correct. It has to be historical accounts, or maybe even more better, account of a family history. So it's all recorded from a certain perspective. But the first one is different from all the others because it's not from a human perspective that it has been written down, but from a cosmic perspective. Because that's what we find at the end, at the final sentence of that first story, that first Toledoth. And that is not in the first chapter of Genesis, remarkably, but in the second one. And in the first, the fourth verse of the second chapter of Genesis, we find that sentence, which is, "This is the historical account of the heavens and of the earth when they were created." So it's the account of the heavens and the earth. And that is also how it starts. It starts with the sentence, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth." And as I said before, this is a scientific article, so to say. And I've written a number of scientific articles myself, and it's custom that every scientific article has a summary at the start. And that's also here the case, because the sentence, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth," is a summary of the complete story, of the complete article.
It's an abstract right there.
It's an abstract, correct.
Yep.
And that abstract is very accurate, because that's in fact what the whole story is about. It's about the creation of six heavens underneath the top heaven of God.
Now, who do you think wrote this? Are we and how was it written? Was it as some people who you know, believe in the Bible say that it literally was, I guess, referred to it as you know, being inspired or whatnot? But who do you think is the, not that that matters. We don't have to focus too much on the author, but it's just for fun. You know, what do you think?
Yeah, I think somehow the people who wrote this down were either guided, or they had a kind of vision or whatever. I don't think God, him or herself, God has no gender, so, but it's custom to say himself. But God did not write it down, because God is not able to is not present in this world we live in, so that's not possible. It's the same way like all the other Sumerian clay tablets were written down. What Zachariah Sitchin did was he translated the ones that describe how human beings were created. And that's also, when we talk later on this in this story, is also in this story present, at the verses 26 and 27. We'll talk about that later. So I have no reason to doubt about the correctness of this of this writing. I have no idea who did it. But as far as I know, it is correct. And most of all, it makes perfect sense. And that, for me, is the final guide, so to say, the final
right.
judge. Yeah,
right.
That's logic and simplicity, and everything which is logical and simple has to be the truth, and everything that is not simple and very complicated, yeah, cannot be true. That's how I work for long, and that's also the baseline for holy science. Only things that are simple and logical, those are part of holy science, and that's what I put in my books, and all the other things I just leave out until they have a better understanding of it.
All right. Now, Genesis, then, what we see coming out of the today's Bible, the Hebrew Bible, the first book, if you will, there, is this just an accurate retelling of that story, or you know, did they add or change something in what we have in the Bible today?
It actually is quite accurate. There are the major error is that in the first sentence, some translations talk about only one heaven. They say God created the heaven and the earth. They lack the plural S. So that is a major mistake, because it's not one heaven. It's in total six heavens underneath the top heaven. So there's a hierarchy of seven heavens in total. But the main mistake is at the verses 26 and 27. And most people think that God said, "Let us make man in our image after our likeness." And that is totally wrong. Because during the first 5 days of creation, where the first five levels underneath the top level were created, there was a single God, a sole God, only a unity of creation. And then suddenly, at this 26th verse, during the creation of the sixth level, we see there becomes a plural God. And that doesn't make any sense at all. Why does God suddenly become plural? So the correct version here is that not God himself created man, but God has other gods make men in the assignment of God, so to say. So God ordered other gods to make man. And those gods, not with a capital G, but with a small g, with a lowercase g, those gods are called Anunnaki by Zachariah Sitchin in his book. And that means literally those who Anu sent from the heaven to the earth. So Anu is the leader, so to say, the chief of the Anunnaki, the chief of the gods with a lowercase g. And he is also called El in other scriptures. And the word Elohim, which is mentioned in the Bible, Elohim is also a reference to El, because it means the sons of El. So El and Anu are the same guy, so to say. And their sons are Anunnaki, called in the books of Zachariah Sitchin, or in the Bible they are referred to as Elohim. And those Elohim, they created on the basis of the right upwalking monkey, the Simia erectus in Latin. So the monkey being that is walking upright. From that being on, the Anunnaki created the man in their own image after their own likeness. So that's in fact what has to be written down correctly in the first chapter of Genesis, or the first Toledoth. It has to be, and God said, let gods make, with a lowercase g, make man in their image after their likeness, and so on.
So who are these, Johan? Is this God's middlemen, or how should we define these? I don't know.
Yeah, they are, you could call them space travelers or ETs or whatever you like to know,
right.
Aliens or doesn't really matter. It is also in the Bible, a lot of descriptions here that say those days the giants walked on the face of the earth. But giant is not literally, of course they were also bigger and there were really giants, but it mostly means those who are great men, and great in the sense that they have powers, they have capabilities which are much greater than what a human being in those days was capable of. They were able to change the genes, for instance. They were able to create all kinds of animals. They could create horses with wings and so on. So in fact, they were creators, and a god, definition of a god is very simple. It's just a creator. Any being that can create is a god. You and I are also gods.
So the Genesis 6:4, the Nephilim were on the earth in those days, and also afterward, when the sons of God came into the daughters of man and they bore children to them, they were the mighty men who were of old, the men of renown. That's the passage out of there. So it's, you interpret this is it an interbreeding, or is it a genetic kind of mixing that's going on there?
No, the Bible is really clear what happened, eh? What I said before is Elohim means the sons of El. So these were, say, 100% Anunnaki. They were beings from another planet. Sitchin calls that planet Nibiru.
Right.
Nibiru. But the Nephilim, they are the offspring of the Elohim father and the human being mother. So those Nephilim were the sons and the daughters of a father who was an Anunnaki and a mother who was a human being. So they were half breed, so to say. And you can also refer to them as the blue bloodline. So everyone who claims to have a blue bloodline thinks of himself or herself to originate from that first crossing between the gods, the lowercase g, and a human being mother.
The divine right to rule, right?
But another word is divine, because the word D-E is totally different from the word theos, 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 or the, is a reference to God, to the God with a capital G, but with a lower, but the word de is a reference to deity and deism and so on. And that D is the same as El or Anu. So it's indeed a divine right, because the right does not from God. It's not a godly right, it's a divine right. So that's in our language, we think of those words as being the same, but that's absolutely not true. Divine rights originate from El or Anu or D, and godly rights originate from God. And there's only one godly right, and that is our godly birthright. And that is also known as the Ark of the Covenant. And that means that we are entitled to rule over this planet. That is the legacy of God, because that's in his testament, his will. And his will has two parts, an old part and a new part. The old part is really simple. It just gives us 10 basic rules that we have to follow. And when we do that, then we can keep our birthright. Then the Ark of the Covenant is still there. The moment we break one of those rules, then we lose our birthright and the connection with God is lost permanently. And God somehow thought, yeah, that was a little bit too harsh. So next there was the New Testament. And the New Testament describes how we can restore our birthright, how the Ark of the Covenant can be repaired, so to say. And that whole story in the New Testament is based on the personification of the sun Helios, the star in the middle of our solar system. And most people think that the person of Jesus, the individual of Jesus, was a human being who actually lived on this planet about 2,000 years ago. But it's just a personification. The sun never reincarnated on this planet as a human being. So it's just it's a personification in order to help us to understand what we can do in order to become enlightened. And of course, we use the most enlightened being in our solar system, which is the central sun, as the example of how to do that. For instance, let me give an example. Can the sun walk over water?
Yeah, sure can.
Yeah, the sunlight is reflecting over the water, and then you see the sun walking over the water. So it's really easy for the sun to walk over water. And just the same as easy it is for Jesus, because Jesus is the personification of the sun. So on the basis of the story of Jesus as the personification of God's son, S-U-N, not S-O-N, he shows us what we can do to become under God again. And that's why I also gave the title to my latest book, Understanding God, because it's standing under God, and also, of course, understanding, but it has a double meaning. By placing ourselves under God again, then we get our birthright back again. So that's, in fact, the essence. And another thing I can add to this is most people confuse Jesus with the Christ, but Jesus is the Son of God, S-U-N. Well, the Christ is the Son of God, S-O-N. And those are rather different. And to make it even more confusing, the Jesus as a personification of the Son of God, S-U-N, helps us to create ourselves, or to resurrect in ourselves the Christ, so that we all become Son of God again, S-O-N. So there's a lot of confusion there. That's why I also made an article on my website, pateo.nl, where you can see that confusion. And also in a number of scriptures, parts of the Bible, those concepts are confused, and that's not really helpful for our understanding. For instance, some people say the Lord Jesus, but the Lord is God. It's the Lord God. The Lord is at the highest level is God, and Jesus is maybe a Lord, but at a much, much lower level. So it's not really helpful to call Jesus the Lord, because the Lord is God, and Jesus is just a Lord at a lower level. And Jesus is not Christ. So people talk about Jesus Christ, but that's not helping at all, because Jesus is the sun, the star, and Christ is just a reference to the state of consciousness we can acquire when we stand under God again.
So you make a couple of distinctions there between the different characters. Now, how do you think that historically has played out then? Is there, I mean, at the time, a couple of thousand years ago, was there, the validity of Jesus, I guess we're talking about here, no matter what title you put on the on the man or whatnot. But was there such a man around, do you think?
There's no evidence that suggests that there has been a man, a human being on this planet, by any name, it can also be Joshua or any name you like to give, around that time. The first book that mentions this character, as you said it, that personification, is one of the Gospels. And that was written at least 40 years after the presumed death date of Jesus, the crucifixion date.
Right.
Yeah, most people assume that if he was born as a human being, must have been around 4 BCE, 4 years before our current era. And that means that around 29 or 28 CE, time of our current era, he must have died. And the Gospels are much older. So it's very remarkable that you wait about 40 years, and some are even up to 100 years, before you write down this story. That doesn't make any sense. As if it really was that kind of miraculous man, then yeah, I would start writing it the very next day, or perhaps even during his life already. And another remarkable thing is those Gospels were not written down in Hebrew nor in Aramaic, but they were written down in Greek. So that doesn't make any sense either, because that was not the language spoken, and it was the language for the educated people, so to say. So that's also very remarkable. I can go on, but I believe about 29 books so far have been written about this Jesus myth. So the fact that a person named Jesus, a human being named Jesus, has lived on this planet is a proven fact, is a proven myth, sorry to say it correctly, is a myth, it's proven to be a myth. So it's not helping at all to think of Jesus as a human being. Jesus is the Son of God, Jesus is the risen Savior, and Jesus is also our Father who art in heaven. Today I wrote down the true wording, the correct wording of that prayer. The prayer that starts with "Our Father who art in heaven," and most people who are unaware of this, who are ignorant, they assume that "Our Father who art in heaven," that it is a reference to God, but that is not true. It is a reference to the Son Elios, and the Son Elios, or Jesus, you can also call the Son Jesus, is in fact the risen Savior. Is in fact the is our Father, meaning the fire in the sky, up in the sky. And all the stories about the birth and also rebirth of Jesus on December 25 have everything to do with the winter solstices. During December 21, the bow that the Son Elios describes in the sky is the smallest of the year. And that bow remains the smallest for 3 nights and 3 days, so for 3 natural days. So 3 days that bow is not moving, not growing, not shrinking. So you could say that bow is dead. So Jesus is 3 days dead. And on December 25, for the first time after 3 dead days, the bow becomes a little bit bigger. The sun rises a little bit higher in the sky. So Jesus is reborn. The sun is reborn and becomes stronger and stronger. And that means that light has become, is a kind of comeback from the light, from being the most dark period. Then light becomes stronger every day a little bit more.
So you have myth woven in with astrology, obviously mixed with the real observations of, astronomy and everything else. But how do you couple this with something like, let's say, Joseph Atwill's work? I know that you did an interview with him as well, and there's certainly others who talk about this too. But you have political agendas, at the time woven into the story. And then, if we take that together with what you claim is an accurate scientific account of the creation process, it makes it very, the Bible as a whole is all over the place, and it's got so many writers to it. And then the church has, of course, through their ecumenical councils, excluded certain texts, they've refined it, they've updated it. Why do a lot of people cling on to this still? Is it because there is a core truth, contained within that, and that's what people are attracted to, or how do you deal with that?
Yeah, that's I think that's basically the story is very important, and that's why it has been used or claimed by people who want to keep in control or gain control. I also did an interview with Joe Atwill, so I'm familiar with his work, and of course he's showing that in the Roman time, the Roman emperor time, there was a lot of interest in claiming this story. And there is also, when you look at the work of Dan Brown, and there are other people as well, they think that in fact GC was Julius Caesar, or a child of Julius Caesar, and so on. So there are many stories in here.
Yeah.
But that's all, you could say, human affairs, and human affairs connected with power. And I think this story has been a little bit altered and perhaps influenced by those influences, those powers. But the core of the story is a spiritual one. It's about how we can raise from the dead the Christ within us. Because to be very honest, me, I think I violated those Ten Commandments, by very, very number amount of times. So I was not longer a man of God, so to say. And it really struck me as kind of lightning in the clear sky when I fully realized what I have become and how I have pushed away God from my life. So when I realized that, I placed myself under God again, and I radically changed my life. That has happened during the last few weeks.
Tell us more about that. What was the experience you had, and then later we can talk more about the Ten Commandments, and again where you believe those actually come from, and why those are the rules. I mean, literally, it could be anything, right? But it's a very distinct 10 rules that are given to us. So, but tell us about your experience first. What was this about?
I'll do that, but those are not just 10 rules. There's a lot of logic in it. The first five are about us bringing ourselves up to the level of God again, and the lower five are just guidelines to make life on earth possible. That's all. And also the ordering from 1 to 10 is extremely logical. So it's not just 10 commandments. Those commandments, if you really understand them, then you see the logic of it. And that's what I also written down in an article on my website.
But all right. Well, I need help to understand that and clarify that. So, but tell us, when we will get into that, but tell us about your experience first then.
Yeah, I was watching a series of videos by a Canadian guy who calls himself Marcus. And I was intrigued what he did, because he just sits in front of a great TV screen and he puts on his slides one by one. And from what he said, I felt that it was true. And I recognized also a few things which I already found in my own research. So I was intrigued and I kept watching and watching. I think in total it was, I have no idea, maybe 20 hours of video I watched. But then it struck me, and then it struck me what the true meaning of the Ten Commandments was. For instance, the second one, most people think that you cannot make any graven image or whatever it means. But it simply means do not copy the creation of God. And that's what we've been doing, because I'm a human being. I'm a creation of God, not directly by God, but God is the architect, so to say, of the total plan. But what we did, we created persons. A person, or some call it a natural person, is a creation of the law. It's not natural. It's unnatural. So what we did, we created a human being and we copied it into a person. So when I realized from those videos from Marcus that my person was still there, I could never put myself under God again as long as my person was still alive.
Wait a minute, clarify that a little bit more. I'm not sure I understand that, the person. How is that? Are we creating it individually, or is this done to us when we come to this planet?
No, I'm talking about a legal person in this case.
Ah, okay. Yeah, okay. I got it. Yeah, sure.
A legal person has a number. I had a number. Mine is 1226989845.
Sure, the state, the government, the way we've born into the prison system. Yeah, sure.
Exactly. Yeah. And I already was involved in the Freeman movement in the Netherlands here. So I already claimed my legal person, the ownership of my legal person. And I said, okay, that legal person is now, from now on, my property. And that means that the state has no longer any business with my legal person. So that was really a big help. But I saw that was not the end of the story, because I had to terminate my legal person. So that's what I did. I sent a letter to the community where it is in the system, and I ordered them to terminate it.
And what happened?
They sent me a reply that they were not able to do so because they need a death certificate.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. But I explained again to them. I have no reply on that one. That there is a difference between a human being and a legal person, and the legal person doesn't need any death certificate.
You know what? I definitely understand that process, but the way I view that is that I never personally asked to be written in there anyway, so I don't need to clarify that I need to be written out of their system. But you know, that's just a difference of philosophy, I guess, in terms of.
That's also a very good approach. But as I already started it,
yeah,
I somehow joined the system. And that means I was still giving life to that legal person. You could say a human being without that person is still under God if that person is obeying the laws of God, the Ten Commandments. But the moment that I give life to that person, that legal person, then I create the Antichrist. Because under God, I give life to the Christ. But if I don't do that, then I give life to the Antichrist. And as long as the Antichrist is still alive in my life, I can never put myself under God again. So I had to terminate it.
How did you give life to the fictional person?
By accepting that legal fiction as being me. I identified myself with it. I identified myself with a passport, driving license, and
okay. So sorry to interrupt. But it was an internal process where you were admitting, I guess, to the legal fiction that was being created around your physical and spiritual self.
Yeah, I unawarely accepted it as the same as myself. I thought that legal entity was me. I identified myself with it.
Right.
And with the Freeman movement, I created the difference. I saw that the legal person was something else than me as a human being. But that process was not completed. So when I saw the videos from Marcus, it struck me really clearly, and it realized me what I had to do. And also what came clear to me, that is not in his videos, because I think he also has some understanding not fully done yet, but somehow he's not replying to my emails I sent to him, but that's okay.
You might get a lot of emails and a lot of requests or whatnot, but yeah.
Perhaps, yeah.
What was if people want to go check out some of those videos, do you have those linked up on your website if they're curious?
But I'm not sure where. But I will send you the link to his website. Well, it's very easy. I think it's just servantking.com, if I'm correctly, because that's actually what I will look it up later. But that's exactly what we do when we restore our Ark of Covenant. Then we become king again, king on this planet. But we still place ourselves under God, so we are serving God. That's why I also call Holy Science the true service of God. We're serving God, but we are king. So we are servant king. And that is the name of his website, if I'm correct.
All right.
It's also under the web links of mine. It's servant king, one word, .info. .info.
All right.
There you can find all his videos, and it's really remarkable.
Oh, there was one, .us one, too. That was a different site. So.
Oh, okay.
Never mind. But .info. Yeah, okay, got it. Interesting.
Yeah. So that's what I did. I changed that in my life. And what I want to explain now is about the process of baptism, because some people think that they actually have to put water on their head in order to repent. But that is just a very literal meaning, because when it's described what God created, it says the earth and also the waters under the earth and the heavens above, something like that. I think it starts with the heavens above, then the earth and the waters under the earth. So that means that the lowest of this is the waters, and people want to put themselves under the lowest, so under the water, to repent and to become under God again. But of course, it's not a literal meaning. The real repenting is not in the physical world. It's in the mental world. It's in our mind.
Right.
So when we place ourselves in our mind under God again, that is enough, and we don't have to play with water.
All right. Let's see if we can get into some of the commandments then, and how you... what your take on that is.
Okay, great.
Yeah, we can unless there's something we're missing out here, unless you want to wrap things up on another note first, Johan.
No, the Ten Commandments is key here, because if you don't understand those Ten Commandments, then you can place yourself under God again, but you will still violate a number of commandments, and then you, you don't have your title. You're not a servant king. You're a servant, but not a king. So that's not really helping. The first one is, the genuine meaning is, acknowledge God as the prime creator. And that's also the start of the first chapter of Genesis. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. So it's really simple. It started all with God, because in the beginning, the real beginning of everything, the first beginning was God. God is the first thing. Before God, there is no thing, nothing. And if you acknowledge that God created everything, that God is the first, and that you then you acknowledge that, then you are applying the first commandment. The second one is, do not copy the creation of God. So some people talk about the graven image, but that's very materialistic way. It simply says anything that God has created, you cannot copy. God has the copyright on everything God created.
Not Monsanto.
Monsanto. It says clear example. Monsanto is clearly violating this rule. But also, our own legal system is also violating this, because God also created the law. The Ten Commandments we talk about now is the law of God. So God created the law. And when we copy that idea of the law, when we make our own laws, man-made laws, then we also violate this second commandment. So you have to choose whether you bow for God or you bow for the man-made laws. And if you do the latter, then you worship an idol, and then you violate the second commandment. So this one is really, really tricky, because nearly everything we created in our life is a kind of copy of what God already created. So it's very careful here. The third one is a kind of reversed of the second one, because it says, do not put God's name on which is not God. So anything that is not of God, we should not put God's name on it. That means we cannot ask God to do us any favors. God, in other words, God does not want to have anything to do with our business. The second commandment, we could say, God says, do not mind my business, or stay out of my business. And the third one is, mind your own business. At least do not mind God's business.
Right.
And people who pray to God, who ask God for favors, they are clearly violating this rule. This third commandment. So praying to God is out of the question, and cursing, you didn't see this one coming, I think. Cursing is perfectly okay as long as you don't ask God to do anything for you. So you can curse whatever you want, but if you ask for God to condemn you, then you ask God to do something for you, to put God's name on your business, and that is not allowed. So that's the third one. And the fourth one is work your way up to the seventh heaven. And this has everything to do with the creation we just talked about, the first chapter of Genesis. Because it's not about 7 days, as people think it literally. It's about seven levels, seven hierarchies, or seven layers of a hierarchy, or seven heavens. And God wants us to return home. That's in fact the fourth commandment. Come home, that's what God says. Come home to the seventh heaven. Most people are at the lowest level, at the level of the hell, so to say, the first heaven. And it's the commandment is to work our way up, all the way to the top, to the heaven of God.
How did we end up here by choice, or were we put on this level we're currently at?
According to my understanding, everyone who is born is at the second level, and that's the level of our home planet. But the moment we start, for instance, to identify ourselves with our legal person, or when we get educated at school, or we get all kinds of weird ideas, then we drop, then we lose connection with God, and then we fall down. The level of the second level is our natural level, so you can also call it the world, but the one under that, we can call it the underworld. So the underworld is the level below our natural level, and that's where 99% of all human beings are at this moment. And the levels on top of the normal worlds, you can call that the higher levels. Some people think that they go to heaven after they die, but it's after you die, you have not, you don't have any possibility to increase your consciousness to a higher level. You can only do that when you are still alive. So when you are still alive, then you can reach all the way up to the seventh heaven. And if you wait until you are death to come there, then you waste your opportunity here in this life.
We're going to move on to the fifth here in a little bit, but tell us a little bit more where you get the layers from. What do you base this on, Johan?
Yeah, actually, last year when we talk about the book called Holy Science, I already wrote that down because that's the true interpretation of what God did. God started all the way up at the highest level. That's the level of Do. It's the same as the scale. The scale has seven tones.
Yeah.
Do is the highest one. Under that is the Si, then the La, then the Sol, then the Fa, then the Mi, and the Re is the lowest one. And most people think that those words are just, that they are created somehow, that they have no meaning. But in fact, they're all abbreviations of Latin words. For instance, Do is an abbreviation of Dominus, or in English, dominion. So God has dominion. God is the Lord, the dominion. And Si is Latin, is the abbreviation of the Latin word sidera, and that means all stars. So Si is the level of the universe, of all stars of the universe. La is the abbreviation of Lactea, and Lactea is a reference to milk. So it's pointing out to the Milky Way, our star system. Then we have Sol. Sol is not an abbreviation, it's a Latin word, and it means sun. So that's the level of our solar system.
And you're doing this in the reverse order now, right?
Because it's God is the Do, is the highest level, and it goes all the way down to Re. So most people say Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Si, Do again.
Yeah, the reverse again, yeah.
Yeah, but from God it's Do, T. Si, La, Sol, Fa, Mi, Re. So it's,
right, right. Okay.
It's from high to low.
All right.
But we think from light from low to high.
I guess it's because of from our perspective then, huh?
Yeah, that's correct. And that's what I said in the beginning of the show. That's how I also created Holy Science so far, from our lower perspective. But
right.
Recently I've changed my perspective to the perspective of God, and now I address it from that higher. It's the same, but I come now from a different route. I look at now from top down instead of bottom up.
And after Sol?
Sol is the solar system. Then we get Fa, and that is abbreviation of the Latin word Fata, and in English that is fate. And our fate is written in the stars, but not the stars at the level of C, but the stars of the wandering lights in our solar system. So that those are the planets of Mars, Venus, Mercury, Jupiter, and Saturn. They are the wandering lights in our solar system. They wander in front of the signs of the zodiac, the 12 houses of the zodiac, and they indeed signify our faith. The position they have, they influence the faith at that moment. So it's about the planets, the planets in our solar system. And then we have Mi, and Mi is an abbreviation of microcosmos in Latin, or in English, microcosm. And the microcosm is, of course, our home planet. I call our home planet Terra. Some say Gaia means Mother Terra. But that's the planet we live on. And the planet we live on is a kind of microcosmos in respect to the whole of the universe. The whole of the universe we can call the macrocosmos. And we live in a tiny version of that called the microcosm. So that's a level of Mi. And then the lowest one is Re. And Re is an abbreviation of the Latin word Regina. And in English, that's regent. So, and also ruling. And the regent at this level could be human beings. We could rule at this level because that's the level of the surface of the planets. The Mi level is the whole planet, so the sphere. And the Re is about the surface. So you could call it the flat sphere. Of course, it's not flat, but it looks flat to us. And we can rule there, human being that is the Christ, that has erected the Christ, resurrected the Christ in himself, can rule at this level. But if we don't rule, then the moon rules there, and I call the moon Luna. So the moon Luna is the regent at this level, and everybody who is under the rule of Luna is a lunatic. And nearly everyone, the 99% I talked about, they are all lunatics, and the lunatics are ruling this planet for long. And because they have disconnected themselves from God and reconnected themselves with the devil, with the Antichrist. And that's why everything is going dramatically wrong on this planet for long.
Yeah, let me just clarify that again. It's interesting, though. Dominion, you know, being the whole encompassing. And I have all the other ones. But what did you say the she or the T was again? The Shidera?
Shidera, yeah. It's, yeah, in English, people say T-T-T-I, but it's correct to say S-I. It's not T-Do, but C-Do.
Okay.
And C's from Shidera. S-I-D-A-R-A. Or E-A.
And what was the... What was the meaning of that?
Sidera means all stars or stars.
Like sidereal so kind of thing, sidereal time.
Yeah, something like that.
All stars. Okay, so it's basically what you describe as dominion, then all the stars, the Milky Way, the sun, the planets, our planet, the moon. So it's obviously a, you know, from as above, you know, so below kind of transgression here. It's that ladder of the creation cycle, yeah. Right?
It's a hierarchy. At the lowest level, we have the lunar system. Then we have the planet system, then we have the planetary system, then we have the solar system, then we have the star system, and then we have, you can call it the universe system or the of all stars system. So they're all systems, they're all systems. And we can, when we have a system view, it's like the Russian dolls. Maybe you've seen them. You open one doll and then you find another doll inside, and then open again and find another doll. So this is like this. These are six dolls within each other. And the highest doll on top of that, the seventh doll, that is God. So God is the whole of everything. And when we open up God, we find the doll of the universe. Then we open up that doll and we find the doll of the galaxy, Milky Way. We open up that one. We find the solar system. We open that one. We see the planets. And then we see our home planet. And then we see the lunar system. And this is also a yin and yang reverse, because yin, the female, is round, round shape, and round in this case is a sphere, and the male shape is flat, and in this shape, in this case, it is a kind of disc.
Right.
So at the lowest level, we start at a disc. The lunar system is a disc. The home planet, the second level, is a sphere, of course. Then we look at the system of the planets, the planetary system. That's a disc again. Then we look at the solar system, which is a sphere again. Then we look at our galaxy, our Milky Way. That's a disc again. And then the whole of the universe is a sphere again. So it's a perfect alteration of yang and yin. So yeah, holy science is showing us the beauty and the glory of the whole of creation. And it's so marvelous. I can talk about this forever, I think. But it's
interesting. It's remarkable. The music of the spheres, in a way, yeah? Those levels there. But yeah. So that we have an explanation there of the seventh, you know, different layers. And then, you know, you mentioned that where we're born onto and everything else. But let's move on to I believe we were on the fifth commandment there, yeah?
Correct. Yeah, the fifth one is honor your father and your mother. But most people who are unaware or ignorant, they think it's about our biological parents, but that is not true. Our father who art in heaven, that's the son Elios. So that's the ruler at the level of the solar system, the level of soul. And our mother is, of course, our home planet, Mother Terra, our mother who art in earth. The prayer, our Father who art in heaven, is in the Bible, in the New Testament. But there is another prayer, and that goes, our Mother who art in earth, our Mother who art in earth, honored be thy name, and so on. It's exactly the same prayer. So we need to balance those father and mother aspects in our life, the son Elios and our mother Terra. And when we honor both, then we climb up to at least level 2, because our mother is at level 2. And when we honor our father, then we're able to climb up to level 4. So that means we are more than halfway up to the highest level, to the level of God, to the seventh heaven. And that's why this fifth commandment is there, because God wants us to work our way up to the seventh heaven, as it is in commandment 4. But God doesn't want us to fool around very much, very long. So he guides us to honor our father and our mother. And by doing that, then we are able to reach the seventh level higher, and also we live longer, because when we honor our father and our mother, then we are more in balance with nature, and when we are more in balance with nature, our physical bodies will remain longer, so we live longer, and by living longer, we have more chance to reach the highest level. So it's, you could say, it's more in the interest of God, those first five levels. God just wants us to come home, and by honoring those first five commandments, God makes sure that we'll come home as fast as possible.
Now, let me ask you about those before we proceed there. And I just realized that I kind of looked at a somewhat of a different list there. I'm looking at the King James version here as well as you're talking about this, and I definitely get those five there. But do you think that there has been a, I don't know how to put this, but did the when the Hebrew Bible were written, were these co-opted to kind of have a, I don't know, Judaic-centric view? Because it seems to be, it's stuck on the Sabbath, you know, it's stuck on certain things that are, even the first one is tied to, you know, the Exodus out of Egypt kind of thing, you know. Let me see if I find that again. Yeah, in Exodus 20, you know, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. That's like, it's focused on them there, right?
Yeah, there has been a lot of claiming done, but I think the Lord that brought the people from Israel from the slavery in Egypt was not God. That was the deity. That was Anu or El or D or whatever you like to call it. The Jews call it Yahweh, but they don't want to pronounce that name, so they say Adonai instead. But that's not God. That's not God. And also Allah in the Islam is not God. I am very clear about that, because that's not the highest level. God is God, and those gods with a lowercase g, they are they are workers, so to say, in the name of God. They did something part of the plan of God, but that confusion is a lot in the Bible. So, and from that perspective, and with a lot of interpretation and also translation errors, not everything is really clear in that Bible. And I for instance, I use the word holy with WLL to refer to the whole, but I make a lot of jokes about the word H-O-L-Y, because that holy is full of holes. And that's also true with the Bible. That's a story which is full of holes, because a lot of essential knowledge has been left out or is altered, and then you cannot no longer see the whole story. So you need to have knowledge. But with the knowledge of the holy science, and with a little bit of common sense, it's very clear what actually it reads, despite all the translation errors, despite all the political changes that were made and the interpretation errors and so on. Despite all that, it's still possible to see the true meaning.
Now, the first five has a kind of somewhat a separate distinction, and then the rest of the five is of a different nature kind of thing. But it's almost like that's a microcosm of what we see in the Bible as a whole, of the Old Testament versus the New that you kind of explained before. And it seems like there's two different type of entities, as you said. The first one is kind of more of a vengeful, violent God, while the other one seems to be more forgiving. So there's a split even in that regard, right?
Yeah, you could say the first five is about the spiritual aspect of our lives here, and the goal of that spiritual life is to come home again, to reach the seventh level. And the five remaining ones, they are guidelines how to live in an earthly way together, in a physical reality. We should not kill, we should behave morally, we should not steal, we should not lie, and we should not covet which is not ours. And that's about it. So when we obey those five final commandments, then you and I and all other people, we can live in perfect harmony together without causing unnecessary trouble. And when we obey those guidelines, they're not guidelines, they're commandments of God. When we obey those commandments, then we don't need any man-made law to somehow guide us, because these five say it all. When we obey them, life can be perfect. Then we actually create paradise on this life. Because the most trouble we have here is commandment number 9: do not lie and do not steal. When we look at the big corporations, at the banks, and all the sham and sham democracy and so on, which has been created in our current life, in our current so-called civilization, then you see it's horrible. So when we stop stealing and when we stop lying, that will make a really big difference. And when we stop killing too, because we have become so extremely good in killing. We have a multi-billionaire industry which sells guns and all those killing devices. But when we no longer kill, we don't need that anymore. And we don't need to protect ourselves anymore either. So
Well, I was just going to say that it's because of the violation of the sixth commandment there. That's exactly why people do get guns, you know, so they can defend themselves because the laws are not followed, you know. But it's interesting then that, you know, again, these are very, very basic, you know, moral rules, if you will. And yet even the very existence of the church, you know, and you explain this well, of course, with religion and everything else, but you know, if you look back to the past in terms of, you know, the taxes that was levied by the church and ultimately the creation of the kind of the state apparatus came out of that as well. I mean, they violate all these rules themselves, you know, so it's not easy to be born into this this level of existence and try to figure things out, you know.
No, no. That's why sometimes I get also a little bit angry, because there's anger in me, because I realize that I've been lied to big time. And I somehow have to deal with that. So I get I get frustrated and I get angry on people who are still in religion, people who are still trying to control the country, people who are still trying to manipulate us from the universities and so on. So it's really really a hell we created here, and to work up all the way from hell to the seventh heaven, that's quite a journey. But I've been there a couple of times myself at the highest level, and I've experienced, because that's to me is the consciousness of wholeness, to experience, to fully see, understand, feel, sense that everything is one, everything is whole, everything is one perfectly balanced system.
All right. Well, you know what? Let me ask you about that in the second segment. I'm going to ask you about your experience and then also how we couple that with the, you know, if the system was complete or whole, if you will, to begin with, how people's journey would look like. It's kind of like, okay, you can develop a perfect system of, if you will, but still it seems like people need to have the experience of the lower levels for understanding purposes. So there's a kind of a dilemma there. But let me ask more about that in the second segment, Johan. And before we wrap things up with the first, let's give out some details here to your website. You know, you have lectures and stuff on there. You have a new book that you mentioned, Understanding God, the Holy Science Handbook. So tell us where to go on the website to order copies and whatnot if people are interested in finding out more about the work.
Okay, great. Yes, the website is pateo.nl, and pateo is p-e-t-e-o, and that's the word pateo means no longer hidden. It's a Latin word, no longer hidden, .nl in the Netherlands. And for instance, if you go to agenda, one of the items on the listings on the left, then you see that I give a Holy Science Week next year in 2014 in the month of May in Romania. So if people listen to the show and they are able to travel to Romania or they live in Romania, you're more than welcome to join me in a full week of Holy Science, where I explain this and much, much more. The book I recently wrote, the second edition is now out. It's called indeed Understanding God, the Holy Science Handbook. If you want to order it, just go to Books on Pateo and then click on Ordering. The first edition you can order on internet. The second edition is only available in the Netherlands. So either you contact me to see what we can do, or you take the first edition. The difference is about 16 pages, if I'm correct, so it's not that much. So that's the book, and yeah, there is a lot of video information too. If you go to videos on pateo.nl on the left, then you see a lot of videos I've done. The one I talk about now, the creation in 2011, I already made a video presentation called The Creation, and if you go to the second part of that, there I fully explain what I just did about the first chapter of Genesis and the seven levels. I explained that on the basis of the wordings in the Bible. But of course, the main part are the eight articles that are now on the homepage of pateo.nl. So anyone who listens to this radio show and wants to learn more about what I've just been talking about, go to pateo.nl and then click on one of those eight articles to learn more about this. Another thing I would like to mention is the online free presentation of coming Sunday, so December 8th, and that will start at 2200 hours Central European time, but you can find out the time on my website, pateo.nl. And I will give an online presentation of the work of Leonardo da Vinci. So if you want to learn more about this, you can join that online presentation for free via the School of the Holy Science.org.
All right, very good stuff. We'll have the links up on redicecreations.com. We'll take a short break here, and then we'll be back with more. Stay with us if you want.